Good morning, everyone. It is Friday, March 20th. This is the Arts Education Working Group, and it's about 8:40. In November, voters told lawmakers that they were willing to protect Minnesota's heritage, including forest, waters, parks, trails, arts, and history, education, and preservation. And part of the process is to find out, I guess, what we're doing now in arts and education, and who are the participants, and how might this new money enhance what they're doing. So Senator Leroy Stumpf, who chairs the E-12 Education Committee, asked me to chair a subcommittee on arts and education to start to work through that process. Members and to the witnesses today, we're hearing not from everyone who participates, certainly, but we are going to try to get a flavor of what's out there. And we don't have a budget yet. We don't know how much money might be coming toward arts and education, but this will lay the groundwork for having that conversation in the future. I want to thank everyone who is here this morning, and I just want to remind people that we have a limited number of senators at the table, and that some of them have other committees this morning that are meeting, and some bills are being presented. So they're going to come and go, and at times you may be talking to me. I am committed to staying here, but we are going to be done by 11 at the latest. So I just ask you to be brief and to the point, and this is strictly a hearing. We're not moving any legislation today, and we certainly aren't earmarking any money for any specific project. So we just need to know what you're doing in the arts and education and how this new money might enhance what you're doing. And with that, we'll get started. I believe the University of Minnesota is going to come to the table first, Dr. David Myers. Good morning, welcome, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, staff members, and committee members. My name is David Myers, and since September, I have been director of the School of Music at the University of Minnesota. Minnesota's strong record on quality of life issues is known throughout the country, and it's my honor to contribute to that quality of life through the arts and through the collaboration of the university with other institutions and initiatives. I am very grateful for a few moments before this working group this morning. I thank you for listening to my comments, and as this is my first time testifying in the state of Minnesota, if I make any missteps in protocol, I hope you'll forgive them. In 1996, I conducted a national study on music education partnerships for the League of American Orchestras. The purpose was to understand how orchestras, communities, and schools could collaborate for stronger music education programs. Longstanding concerns about the place of music and arts education had led to numerous efforts to unite schools and orchestras around common visions and concerns. The findings of this study, entitled Beyond Tradition, corroborate the findings of numerous other studies that have looked at the increase in educational quality that may occur when schools and communities work together. These findings include the following. Since A Nation at Risk, the 1983 report issued during the Reagan presidency, public-private partnerships have become commonplace in education. In the arts, funds often do not exist to employ sufficient numbers of certified arts educators to provide sequential learning programs for all students. Thus, partnerships between schools and community arts organizations have been viewed as a means to increase the availability and access to arts education. While many types of partnerships exist, relatively few represent the levels of true collaboration necessary to instill learning-based legacies for school improvement. When collaborations are effective, more can be achieved through shared vision and effort than by any one institution or agency working on its own. Collaborations that make a difference usually begin with mutual effort to address local concerns, goals, and resources in new ways, so that shared commitments to student learning are the primary concern rather than existing programmatic agendas of cooperating institutions. When they are well done, collaborations represent a significant return on invested dollars in terms of program quality, relationships between school and the real world, the place of the school in lifelong learning, and the contributions of the arts to creative thinking and problem solving throughout life. Elliot Eisner, a Stanford University professor of curriculum and visual art, has said that beyond creative problem solving, the citizens of a global society need to have feel for the problems, concerns, and diverse populations with whom they will interact. While these days much time and energy are spent on demonstrating the cognitive benefits of arts education for math, science, language arts, and social studies, one of the things we often lack from our arguments for the arts is the fact that their expressive, social, and interactive dimensions incorporate the ability to have feel for others and for the greater good of humankind. Students in a band or orchestra or choir must simultaneously listen to one another, follow a leader, express their individual forms of expression within the group, and apply creative problem solving to the common end of performing a piece of music. But the real reward is in the aesthetic satisfaction, the feelings that arise for performers and their audience through that music experience. Students who compose their own music or visual artwork under the direction of a certified music or art educator share their work with real-world artists in school or community settings and discover how professional and amateur artists go about their own daily work, have a complete cycle of educational experience that links what happens in school with life beyond the schoolroom walls. When we dance, sing, play instruments, draw, paint, or act, or engage in combinations of some or all of these, we are, in fact, replicating and portraying the deepest experiences of life, the experiences of struggle, creative thinking, application, sensitivity, and fulfillment that are ultimately central to the well-lived life and thus to the assurance of a socially and psychologically healthy world order. It was a high moment in November to learn that voters had approved the Legacy Amendment. Given the current economic concerns, the question now is how to ensure that the amendment realizes its mandate to enhance and enrich existing arts education endeavors. Across the U.S., people committed to the arts and arts education are watching to see how Minnesota fulfills with integrity the longstanding efforts of those who worked diligently over many years for this opportunity. One of the things we discovered in the 1996 study was that colleges and universities directly responsible for the education of artists and arts educators were not involved in the design and development of collaborative arts education programs. Thus, in 1999, I founded a university center for educational partnerships in music, with the mission of advancing the quality of music education through mature collaborations among higher education, community musicians, arts organizations, and schools. The center led a collaboration of Atlanta area institutions in enriching sequential school music programs through collaboration with real-world musicians. Unlike programs in which artists construct curricula independently or arts organizations take on the role of education service provider, our programs were intentionally organic. They began with conversations among teachers, artists, university personnel, and sometimes even students and parents regarding learning goals for the year. We facilitated these conversations, nurturing them toward planned classroom experiences that enhance learning both in and beyond music. Our goal was to establish a sustained and evident culture for arts learning that made the arts as important in the curriculum as every other subject. Classroom teachers connected musicians' visits with ongoing learning. University students worked alongside teachers and professional musicians. Music teachers planned the curriculum. Musicians performed arrangements of songs that children were learning in music classes, creating a community of music making and learning that was integrated with broad learning goals and objectives across the curriculum. Because of the program's evidence of school change, thoroughness and comprehensive planning, implementation, improved student learning, and assessment, Harvard University's Project Zero selected this program called Sound Learning as one of 12 national models of quality arts education to be studied for its Lila Wallace-funded report, Deepening the Quality of Arts Education. In 2007, the program received the Atlanta Partners in Education A+ Collaboration Award. Today, despite the inevitable turnover of teachers and musicians who have worked in sound learning since its inception, the legacy of quality music education continues among the original partnering institutions and some additional ones. This, perhaps, is the best test of a wise investment. Although funds over the years were invested by various national corporations and foundations, sound learning continues to influence continuing generations of children through locally invested funds and efforts. The return on investment from the granting organizations thus lives on as teachers, musicians, principals, and university personnel continue fundamental commitments to a collaborative vision for high-quality arts learning and teaching. There are today many examples of successful partnering programs. In Dallas, a large program called Big Thought engages many arts and education institutions in a common vision. The big thought guiding this program is that a community working together can lift children up and better their lives using arts, culture, and education as tools and catalysts. The notion that it makes good common sense to work together in coordinated ways is well established. What is needed now are leading models of arts education that risk moving beyond partnership to institutionalize deep, rich, organic collaboration that is not time-limited by project-based funding and that establishes a legacy for joint school-community accountability. Today, education is a priority of many arts organizations. Many of these programs are outstanding. However, in some cases, they may lack coordination and may function in a climate that lacks cohesive vision with schools and communities. When schools, arts organizations, and higher education truly collaborate, the focus ought to move toward the developmental learning needs of children as realized in the practice and understanding of the arts. Minnesota has before it a great opportunity to advance the quality of arts education and access by using legacy amendment funds to catalyze innovative models of arts teaching and learning. As we all know, the arts are perennially in jeopardy in our education systems, not because the public does not believe in the value of the arts, but because the arts are not an integrated priority within our education programs. Part of the problem is that too few certified arts teachers are teaching too many children, which compromises the extent to which the arts can hold their legitimate place as an essential component of school culture. All children in all grades deserve high-quality arts education throughout their school careers, and the legacy amendment provides the opportunity to challenge ourselves to achieve that goal through collaborative means. Many of us know the famous Good to Great book by Jim Collins. Fewer of us are aware of the monograph Collins wrote about good to great for the nonprofit sector. His thesis is that great organizations have a clear vision, maintain the discipline to focus on that vision, and understand how to procure and invest their resources in support of their vision. If we believe that the vision of a global society is to achieve a sustainable quality of life for all people, then we must believe that the arts are a fundamental means of fostering creativity and sensitivity among those who make up and lead that society. If we believe that the arts are crucial to the quality of life for Minnesotans, we must believe that sequential, rich, deep, and meaningful arts learning is also central. If legacy funds are used to catalyze collaborative vision and programs that are prudently designed and operated, that are cost-effective and yield good return on investment, that transcend the boundaries of rural and metropolitan, as well as the boundaries of school and real world, and those between world-class and locally grounded institutions, then Minnesotans will be assured not only of an enhanced standard of living, but an arts-rich culture that will be sustained because people have developed a lifelong desire for the arts through arts education programs. Moreover, our corporations, education systems, social service organizations, and others will benefit from the creativity, innovation, and ability to feel among their employees. As many have said, this is not the hour to hide the candle of creative thinking. This is an hour in which to be decisive. The evidence is clear that every organization and endeavor must rethink the way it does business in response to the economic challenges that confront us. The legacy amendment provides an opportunity to contemplate our values, to reconsider the centrality of the arts in human life and learning, and to plan how all of us, together, with feeling, can build the strongest possible arts access and education programs for Minnesota's citizens. Thank you very much for the opportunity to share my thoughts.
Thank you, Dr. Myers. Questions for the doctor? Thanks for your testimony. Or Senator Rommel?
Less a question, more a comment. I moved to Minnesota after getting my master's degree as an art educator, and just at the time when we were laying off art teachers, for whatever reasons, back in the 70s. And so I agree with Dr. Myers that we have too few teachers teaching too many children, and that all children do need high-quality arts education. Dr. Myers, I noticed that your two themes seem to come through in your presentation. And the first, that you believe that one of the values of arts education is it creates our ability to feel or to empathize, and then that the other, it gives us or heightens our ability to be creative. And so am I hearing you correctly? Are those are the two major contributions that the arts have to our lives?
Dr. Myers.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Rummel. I think that's correct. I would only add the third piece, and that is the importance of a common vision around those values among all of us who believe that arts education is central to our own lives and learning, and certainly to the lives and learning of children.
Dr. Myers, the university in many other areas is also has input from private sources and foundations in research and development and education. Is the music department also funded from outside sources?
Yes, it is.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Purpich Center for the Arts, Pam Paulson, Mike Hyatt. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Pam Paulson.
Pam, I'm going to have you pull that microphone just a little bit closer to you so we can get a real good read on your voice. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. My name is Pam Paulson. I serve as Senior Policy Director at the Purpich Center for Arts Education. I've been there since the beginning, and we are here today, Mike Hyatt and I, to share with you some information about the Purpich Center, but also about the landscape of arts education in Minnesota. So I will begin. Why are we here today? We want to serve as a resource to this committee, to the Senate Arts Education Working Group. We would like to connect some dots in this landscape to maybe provide a framework for arts education in Minnesota. We'd like to share some policies that we've been working on with the Department of Education and the legislature over the years that undergird the landscape of arts education, and we would like to demonstrate, as Dr. Myers suggested, a very collaborative environment and approach to this work. You asked the question, what is arts education? And to start with, we thought you might want to know a little bit more about the Purpich Center, a little bit of the context. And here's the mission of the Purpich Center: to provide all students in Minnesota the opportunity to develop and integrate their artistic and academic abilities to their highest potential. And the key here really is all Minnesota students. As a state agency, we want to impact the lives of all 850,000 students in Minnesota. That is a big task. In 1985, the legislature created this Purpich Center, and it includes three primary parts. We have an arts high school for 11th and 12th grade students that serves as an innovative lab, and it has a residential program, so we really can work with students that come from across the state. We also have a state library that's open to anybody that lives in Minnesota over the age of 18, and our own students and faculty. And then the area of the agency that Mike directs is professional development and research, where we try to work with teachers and artists across the state for staff development and provide resources for those folks. And Dr. Myers also talked about the fact that there's study in the arts where you learn how to dance or paint or draw or take photographs or act, all of those things learning in those arts. And there's also an integration through interdisciplinary learning where you use the arts to study other subject areas. For example, in our school, we often combine visual arts and science or dance and math. We have social studies and music integrated projects, and we have sometimes world languages and theater, and there's a host, there's a million other ways to see that integration happen. We do love the role of being a collaborator with school districts and teachers and higher education and arts organizations, and the people sitting around this room today, we met out in the hall, and we were so happy to see each other because we work all the time together in a collaborative fashion. Minnesota, I think, has a good structure for that. And there is a structure in Minnesota. It is these collaborating partners, these policies that I mentioned, and the fact that we create these networks If you look at the scene, there's this idea that we do have some learning targets called standards, but we have a whole bunch of people working on those. We have artists and classroom teachers and government agencies like the Arts Board, and we work with school and community leaders. And in this picture, you don't see the Purpose Center because that would still be going on. There'd still be a lot of activity. But if you put the Purpose Center in there, those standards become more visible, and there's all these connecting lines that start to happen because the center serves as a hub to facilitate, collaborate, and strengthen arts education in Minnesota. So I thought you might want to know what these statutes are that have been passed over the years. Probably the central one, maybe the most important one for everyone, is that we have come to some agreement in Minnesota about what the learning expectations are for kids. And Senator Rubble asked, you know, what is this that we're about? If you go to these standards, which are currently being revised and will be available for students and teachers in a year, that are even better than the last ones were, these arts academic standards are required for statewide accountability in Minnesota. We also have a graduation requirement so that students that graduate from high school in Minnesota must earn one credit in the arts to graduate. And what makes this even more of a system and a structure is that our post-secondary schools also require the arts for admission. So the kids have to have them to graduate, but to get into a MinSCU institution, students are required to complete a year of study in the arts. And the same thing at the University of Minnesota. The area that we're the weakest and where we need to do the most work is accountability, but it does exist to some degree. There is a statute that requires boards of school boards to adopt a written policy that includes one piece that I put in here for you, the process for evaluating each, and that means every single kid's, progress toward meeting the academic standards. School districts have to do that. They have to have a policy that talks about how they're going to measure that. They also have to report it. And by October 1st of each year, the school board shall use some kind of a reporting system and adopt a report that includes student achievement of goals of how that district's going to make sure their students meet the academic standards. The Purpose Center, by the legislature in 1994, was given the responsibility to design and promote arts education opportunities for all Minnesota pupils in secondary and elementary schools. We're supposed to gather and conduct research, and we're supposed to serve as a liaison for the Department of Education to national organizations. One other area of policy is teacher licensure. Over the years, the Purpose Center's worked with the Board of Teaching, and we now have teacher licensure in dance, music, theater, and visual arts. So I'm going to turn it over to Mike to take that kind of policy framework and landscape and give you just a couple of examples about how we at the Purpose Center, actually, your second question was, how do you deliver arts education?
Thank you, Ms. Paulson. Ms. Wright?
Great. Thank you. Good morning. My name is Mike Hyatt. I serve as the Director of Professional Development and Research at the Purpose Center, and I've been there for approximately 12 years. And prior to that, I spent 20 years as a music educator in the state of Minnesota and kept going to a lot of Saturday workshops. And my wife said, why don't you go Monday through Friday as well? And I chose to do that. But on a serious note, I really chose that path because I felt that a place like the Purpose Center was making a difference and making an impact on arts education. And I'd like to just briefly share with you my team, which is numbers 8. We have folks in all of our arts areas and a real dedicated group. And this is how we attempt to provide education support to all Minnesota students and teachers and administrators and arts organizations. Pam has mentioned a couple. The idea of collaboration is very deep and important to our work. But a couple others to add to the mix. We focus on changing teacher practice. We do that every one of my team is a strong member and an invested member in working with kids. But we realize that by investing in the teacher and changing the teacher practice, not only are we going to potentially change the work that's going on for students right now, we're investing in the future. To change that teacher practice not only will impact the 30 students in the classroom today, but it'll hopefully continue on for many years to go. We also emphasize a very strong standards-based, curricular-focused learning. I think one of the challenges that I experience in my career is that the public perceives the arts as great activities and great meaningful experiences, but I think we have a long ways to go in terms of educating our public about the learning that takes place. As a musician, I learn a great deal by what I hear and the sounds that I can produce and that artistic process. We need to emphasize the learning that goes on in our arts education curriculum. And most importantly, we attempt to develop ongoing connections with teachers, teaching artists, and school administrators. I sometimes refer to some of our work as what you might describe as one-time wonder, and what I say, mean by that is I wonder what we got across in our one-day or one-hour workshop that we had. We know that that's a part of the learning process, and quite honestly, if the opportunity to work with a teacher or work with a school principal, if I can get 1 hour, I'll take that. But if I could have the opportunity to work with them over time, we describe it as a looping process. Many of our programs are grant programs where schools will come to us 2 to 3 times a year over a several-year period, and we see the change in their teaching practice, not overnight, but literally an incremental progress, and we think that's very important. So we're after those ongoing connections. Just to briefly describe some of the major areas that we work in right now, for example, we have what's called the Quality Teacher in the Arts Program, and this is our, initially it was the Best Practices Network, and it really, the opportunity to bring teachers together to discuss issues, to work on standards implementation, curriculum development, and most recently really focused on assessment techniques and processes. We've been funded by a federal grant on that program, and I can tell you we've made great strides. One story that I would share with you that I think kind of speaks to this program was one of our school districts that we've done a great deal of work with is the Duluth School District. And our initiation of that work didn't necessarily come from the music or art teachers there, but it came from the assistant superintendent in curriculum and instruction who came to his music department and said, if you're going to be part of our graduation requirement, I have to know what students are learning in your music classrooms, and you have to produce the results. That was a very daunting statement to music teachers who do everything from, say, come to my next concert or things along those lines. But that's where our work began, and it's really been a partnership not only of the music and art teachers in Duluth, but also the school administration that's been extremely interested in producing tangible, measurable evidence of student achievement. And I can tell you we're making great progress. This spring, we will start to see some real tangible results that teachers are going to bring forward that are examples of learning in their classroom. And so we think that's a great model that we want to share, and we've shared it in places like Bemidji and Worthington and other school districts that are also interested in that very same question. What is the measure of student performance in your classroom? We also try to serve underserved art areas such as dance, media arts, and theater. And I think Minnesota can take a great deal of pride in knowing that we have broadened the landscape of arts education. It's not your typical band, choir, and orchestra and painting and sculpting at the high school, but all of a sudden you're seeing theater education taking place, you're seeing dance, and probably the most rapidly growing area that I see in my work is in the area of media arts or art technology. With the equipment that we sort of, we struggle with it more than the kids do, but quite honestly that is an area of growth, not only from the bells and whistles of the technology, but using them in an artistic way. So that's another direction we go. One of the a program that we inherited that started prior to the Purpitt Center's existence back in the mid-80s was the Comprehensive Arts Planning Program, which is known as CAP. And that long-term district-level planning that helps school districts and communities develop a systemic plan that says this is how we're going to deliver arts education in our community has had great impact. We have worked closely with over 265 school districts in our state, and many of our districts who have come to us initially to develop a 5-year plan have come back a second time. And even in a couple cases, we've had districts come back to us a third time saying, we want to revise our plan. Things have really changed in our community. We want to work through your program. Probably one example there that I would tell you about is The community of Staples, Minnesota, had repeatedly tried to pass bond issues to improve their high school physical plant. They didn't have an auditorium. All of their program, their public programs, took place in their gymnasium. The CAP committee came on board and adopted that as one of their goals to improve the infrastructure and improve the facility of the school system. That CAP committee became kind of one of their tasks was to become the guiding force in attempting to pass a bond levy to build an auditorium. After failing, I believe, three times previously, the first time the CAP process was in place and a strategic plan adopted by their school board was in place, they passed overwhelmingly. Their community supported that. To this day, there's a beautiful auditorium and a real change in the structure in Staples that's an auditorium that's used not only by the school but the community in many ways. So that it gives you an idea that that long-term planning can really make a difference in a community. Another area we work in is the Partner Schools program. Originally, the Magnet School program, Senator Olson was very involved in the implementation of that, and it still continues to this day. Our hope with the Partner Schools is that we will have models throughout our state that will be good examples of in-depth arts education in the school, but also serving as a regional resource that we work through. This is one of our real collaborative partners that we try to do professional development work and just continue the work of arts education. We also work very closely with arts organizations, and our Arts in Schools as Partners program, which is referred to as ASAP, allows us the opportunity to connect between bringing different collaborations that Dr. Meyer spoke of earlier, an innovative approach that brings arts organizations collaborating with schools and educators. Oftentimes I see in my travels that in the traditional sense the school is doing their thing and maybe the arts organization or educational institution in that community is doing their thing, and they don't talk to each other. And I think a program like ASAP gives them the opportunity to develop a common language, gives them the planning time, and really think through creative solutions and new and innovative ways to deliver arts education, and bringing an artist on a sustainable basis to work collaboratively with the teacher. And finally, it may not be the most attractive part of our work, but it's one of the most important, and that's our professional and development and technical support. And we're constantly, right now, with the interpretation of rules in our statutes, my phone rings quite regularly with both principals and teachers asking for clarification, asking for help to understand how am I going to do this with a room of 75 seventh graders, you know, and that's a daunting task. And so that professional technical support in all of the arts areas is one of the key things that we do. I'll give you one example. A young teacher, in fact, in her first year of teaching in a community called Floodwood, Minnesota, called our music education coordinator just a few weeks ago and just in a panic voice said, I have this report that's due to my principal as to how do I relate my curriculum to standards. Well, after a phone call and a visit to Floodwood, that teacher had a plan in hand and was able to go into the principal and say, this is what I'm doing. And our music education person made the difference there. Now, that's one teacher. But we talk about the number of teachers that we're losing from the profession. It's not all the pay that drives them away. I think it's the frustration of not knowing what to do sometimes. And having that resource and having that person that could answer that phone call and take the time and work with that teacher, I think makes a difference that would bring that teacher to stay in the profession. So those are just a few examples of the kind of work that we do. I would stress with you that we're working statewide. On any given day, I have my team is in any place from Thief River Falls to Albert Lea to Worthington and the Twin Cities and in Hopkins and in places like that as well. So I think you have a good statewide voice, and I think the arts education community would tell you that they feel a reasonably good support level. We've been challenged by the budget, as many state agencies have, but I believe we continue to do good work and support teachers all across our state.
And to conclude, the Purpose Center, which is really your state agency for arts education, would like to continue to serve as a resource to both the arts education community that's sitting in this room today and the Senate Arts Education Working Group as we work together to improve arts education for all Minnesota students and teachers. And we thank you for the time you took with us today.
Thank you. Mr. Hyatt, when you sit around with
the administration and dream a little bit, and you saw the amendment pass. Are there things you're not doing that you would like to include at the Purpose Center, or are what programs might be enhanced by additional?
I think one of the things that we've thought about is to have a deeper and more visible involvement, particularly in Greater Minnesota. At one point in time, for example, our partner school program numbered 11 school districts across the state. Due to budget reductions, we're down to 4 right now. I would love to see more tangible, visible resources available to communities all across our state, more in a hub-like situation where we could extend our programming work, not replace it, but allow us to do more. And that's one thing. I think access is a key thing. I think it's the days of every school teacher driving to Golden Valley to attend a workshop. They see the traffic on 169, they won't come twice. I think those days are challenged. The ability for us to be in the communities and in the regions around the state would be a good thing. The other area that I think we could very much invest in, and we're starting to do this, is the area of how can technology help us bring that kind of work to Greater Minnesota. Just one real quick anecdote about that. We conducted our ACE Theater workshop, our spring workshop, and you have wonderful weather for weeks at a time, and the day we have that, there's a snowstorm in northwestern Minnesota, and the team from Waubun, there was no way they were going to get there. Within about an hour's time between our tech department in Golden Valley and their tech person in the Waubun High School, we were able to set up a video teleconference, so those teachers were able to not only participate in that workshop, but they had a portion that they were leading and teaching other teachers and sharing, and they were able to do that via video teleconferencing. So that's another area that I think could be potentially explored that could be a real growth area for improving arts education statewide.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the interest of time, what I would like to do is invite Mr. Hyatt or Ms. Paulson to visit with me a little bit about the arts assessment. I think you might be able to help me and a struggle I'm having right now and how we assess things that are non-quantitative. Thank you.
I do have a copy of the PowerPoint for each of you.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for your time today. They had threatened to go till noon, so we appreciate their brevity. We'll ask the Minnesota Citizens for the Arts, and I see there's 5 different people. We'll come up there a couple at a time in any order that you like, I guess.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Sheila Smith. I'm Executive Director of Minnesota Citizens for the Arts. Minnesota Citizens for the Arts is a statewide arts advocacy organization, and our mission is to provide access to the arts for all Minnesotans. We were the leadership arts organization that first got the arts into the constitutional amendment, and then I, along with Larry Redmond, our lobbyist, were part of the leadership team of the Vote Yes campaign. The constitutional amendment states that arts and cultural heritage funds must be used to support, quote, arts, arts education, and arts access, and to preserve Minnesota's history and cultural heritage. So, of course, arts education is one of the items specifically listed in the constitutional amendment. It further states that the dedicated money under this section must supplement traditional sources of funding for these purposes and may not be used as a substitute. It is our position that at least 50% of the Arts and Culture Fund dollars should go to the Minnesota State Arts Board and Regional Arts Council system for arts, arts education, arts access, and to preserve our cultural heritage. The only item in the list that is not covered by the Minnesota State Arts Board's programs and grants is the history portion. We support lifelong learning in the arts. All of Minnesota's citizens, including children, deserve access to high-quality education in the arts. In the 21st century, with its rapid changes, education is a lifelong necessity. Arts education now takes place in schools, after school, through arts organizations, colleges, and community organizations, and through mentoring and apprenticeships. As stated by Dr. Myers, it is also increasingly provided through collaborations and partnerships between arts organizations and schools. The supplement, not supplant language in the constitutional amendment is very important. It's the responsibility of the state to fund Minnesota's K-12 education system to meet the state's education standards, including those in the arts, through general fund dollars. To ensure that the amendment arts education funds are not simply used to replace arts education efforts already being done by schools, we recommend that this funding be distributed through the Minnesota State Arts Board and Regional Arts Council system. We are very concerned about a statewide impact for any new programming. The State Arts Board and Regional Arts Council serve Minnesota's citizens in all 87 counties, and through grants and other services, and already fund the arts education programs of hundreds of arts organizations and community groups. It is the natural home for the planning and use of these dollars. Because the State Arts Board Regional Arts Council system serves Minnesotans in all 87 counties, it is a funding mechanism that will ensure that the benefits reach across our state geographically. In the past year, the arts organizations, the State Arts Board, and Regional Arts Councils have provided nearly 18,000 arts education and outreach programs statewide, reaching kids and older folks in every community in Minnesota. We're also concerned about minimizing bureaucracy. The State Arts Board Regional Arts Council process of using citizen panels to make funding decisions is important. We do not want these funds lost to bureaucracy. The State Arts Board Regional Arts Council system is also accountable, transparent, and has a wide buy-in from the citizens across the state. They could partner with other agencies as appropriate. We support collaborations, innovation, and assessment. We support a new arts education program that would focus on collaborations between arts organizations, community organizations, and schools. We support creating a new innovative program to deliver arts education opportunities across the state. We support ongoing assessments to learn the state of the arts education and the effectiveness of any new programs. Right now, unfortunately, although Pam was talking about some of the accountability measures in the schools in terms of arts education, this, despite the fact that the arts are required by No Child Left Behind and by Minnesota state standards, no one knows if the schools are providing a complete K-12 arts education to kids. Nobody knows, because the schools are not required to report exactly how they're meeting the standards. So the assessment piece is important.
Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Smith, you just said that we don't know a lot of things about what's happening in arts education in schools. But do we have any idea of the number of arts instructors or music instructors or band instructors or the hours of the day that we've lost over the last, say, 10 years due to cuts in education?
Well, I know that there have recently been some national studies about the effects of No Child Left Behind on the availability of the arts in the schools, and I don't recall the specific percentage that arts instruction hours have been reduced, but they have been reduced because of the focus on the area learning areas that are tested.
So it's disproportionate. Ms. Smith. So it's disproportionate. Fairly obvious?
Yeah.
Senator Olson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Smith, you mentioned having a new mechanism to work with arts education throughout the state. How do you envision that the Purpich Center could play any role in that in terms of their resource center, or are you looking at bypassing that and creating something different?
Ms. Smith?
Well, Senator Olson, currently the Minnesota State Arts Board system has arts education programs that create collaborations between schools, artists, and arts organizations. And because that's our focus for whatever the new thing could be that is could be created out of amendment funds, we believe that's the appropriate place to put these dollars to reinvent and expand the opportunities available through that program.
So, Mr. Chair and Ms. Smith, so you don't see any collaboration with the Purpich Center, or do you expect to see it go away as a result of the governor's budget recommendation?
The issue of whether or not the Purpich Center and the Arts High School should exist is a completely separate question, and I believe absolutely that the Purpich Center and the Arts High School should be retained as is. If the Purpich Center school is turned into a charter school, it becomes only a local resource rather than a statewide resource for all Minnesota's kids, and I think that would be a great loss. Secondly, the Purpich Center's programs for teacher development, teacher training, and assessment, those are all very important things. And even if you got rid of the Purpich Center, you'd have to recreate all that at the Department of Education. So I don't see how you would save a lot of money, because you still need all of those things to happen. The question of how do we use the amendment dollars in part to create new arts education opportunities for kids and for all Minnesotans, actually, that's a separate issue. And we believe that the best place for that is the Minnesota State Arts Board, because they're already, through the grants and services of the Minnesota State Arts Board and Regional Arts Councils, in the last year have provided nearly 18,000 arts education programs, which are collaborations between community organizations, arts organizations, and the schools. So we could use these funds to really create something spectacular that will actually reach the kids right away.
Let's move to the center of the witness table. Please introduce yourself.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the Arts Working Group. My name is Sheila Livingston. I'm Director of Artistic Relations at the Guthrie Theater. I have had the good fortune and privilege of being part of the Guthrie Theater since before it founded in 1961, when I became a volunteer to work towards the Guthrie's foundation. I joined it because of my deep passion for what theater can do for the lives of people, and because I believed my life had been enhanced by the experiences I had after I left a very rural community in Saskatchewan, Canada. In 1971, I was asked to join the staff to become head of the Student Resource Center, which was specifically set up to develop a relationship and partnership with all of schools of Minnesota. Prior to that, all the students in Minnesota had been invited to come to the Guthrie Theater under a Title III program. But that funding dried up in 1969, and there was nothing to replace it, and therefore my job was created in 1971. Education has always been central to the mission of the Guthrie Theater and has been demonstrated in numerous ways, not only for students, but for the entire population. But first, to describe our education programs for young people, I would like to introduce my colleague.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members, my name is Louise Chalfont, and I'm the Director of Education for the Guthrie Theater. I would like to begin by saying that I firmly support giving 50% of the arts and culture funding to the Minnesota State Arts Board and to the Regional Arts Council system so that it reaches every citizen in Minnesota. The Minnesota State Arts Board is a trusted, tried, and true organization, and these are public funds and should be managed by a public system with proven accountability and responsibility. Many of the programs that I'm going to be talking through are as a direct result of Minnesota State Arts Board funding, and we're very grateful for that. I know that you're interested in hearing about particular arts programs that happen at the arts organizations throughout the state of Minnesota, and I just, again, will briefly go through some of our major ones. We have many, many arts education programs. The basic one that we have at the Guthrie is called Show and Tell. And very simply, we have over 100,000 students a year that come to see our student matinee program. And as part of those student matinees, the students are invited to take part in a pre-show demonstration as well as a post-play discussion. During the pre-show, they get to meet with the director of the show or the assistant director or a dramaturg, and that person prepares them for what they're about to see. They point out things for the kids to look for. They point out things about the technical elements of the show that they might not notice if they are just watching on their own. And it's a new program this year, and it's been going extremely well. After the student matinee, the kids are invited to stay for a post-play discussion with the actors, and they have an opportunity to ask questions directly of the professional artists that they have seen at work. This is a program that Joe Dowling recommended that we start, again, this past season, and it's really catching on, and it's really been effective. Another one of our major arts education programs is our educator workshops. We believe strongly that by teaching the teachers can go then back directly into the schools and share the knowledge with the kids. We're talking about a whole statewide program here, and we have teachers from all over the state that come to our educator workshops to prepare them for what the kids are going to see. And those workshops are excellent. I just want to mention very briefly, we did one recently, just this past Saturday, for Raise It in the Sun, which was a presentation by the Penumbra Theater Company. The Purpich Center worked with us on that by helping us get educators to come who wouldn't normally come to this program. It was a phenomenal collaboration between Penumbra, the Guthrie, the Purpich Center. The collaborations are working. They're out there. They're strong. We have I really need to go through this quickly because I could be here all day, and I know time is limited. We have a summer education conference that Sheila started 20 years ago, where about 115 teachers and students from throughout the state come for 3 days during the summertime to take workshops, to see our shows, to take acting classes, and it's a great bonding experience for the educators, the students, and the professional artists. We have study guides that we produce for each of our shows. They're available online. We have a fantastic website with interviews by professional artists, directors, designers, talking about the art that the students and teachers can access at any time. We have professional artists going into the schools to visit with kids. My goodness, we have a lot. We've got an internship program. We have a partnership with the Carlson School of Management now with their entrepreneur program, where they're learning about how to start their own nonprofit organizations, how to start their own arts programming. That's been going great. We are a resource for all schools throughout the state. We get phone calls every day with questions about where do I get a particular costume? How do I handle a student who's dealing with stage fright? You know, can you give me a tip on, you know, how to cast this particular play? The list goes on and on and on. We also do programs that deal with science and math. One of the engineers who worked on the construction of the new Guthrie Theater came and spoke with some science and math students who wanted to hear about how, the structure of the building, how you can use architecture to help with how can they apply science to architecture, and doing it in the building that just won a Pritzker Prize for architecture was extremely inspiring for those students, and it was wonderful to do that program. We have camps. We have a teen club. We supported the Minnesota State Thespian Festival this year, which was the first time since the 60s that the state of Minnesota had a thespian festival for their students. The teachers told me later that it would not have been possible without the Guthrie support. We offered them free meeting space. We were there for them with a lot of advice on how to get that going. We have many classes. We have a partnership with the Normandale Community College, where kids who are taking Introduction to Shakespeare have 5 sessions held at the Guthrie Theater, and they meet with the actors, the directors, the designers, the composers, so that they bring the work of Shakespeare alive. My list goes on, and I'm not going to complete it because I know time is limited. I do have materials for you all that I can have brought to you afterwards. That is just the tip of the iceberg of what the kind of arts education programming that we're providing to all citizens throughout the state of Minnesota. Those are just the kid programs, and now Sheila will talk more about what we do for adults.
Thank you, Louise, very much. I, too, would like to support the 50% of the funds go to the Minnesota State Arts Board because they're the best situated agency to allocate those funds fairly and knowledgeably to the arts organizations and groups across the state of Minnesota, and to make certain that all the citizens of Minnesota benefit from this very important legislation. I'd like to talk a little bit about the fact that the Guthrie Theater is a place where people gather to talk about issues that are important to us as citizens of this community and this state and this country. What we try to do at the Guthrie Theater, because we present the great plays that talk about the great issues that all of us face, we try to connect those plays to issues that we think people should be concerned about or be aware of. And I'd like to use two examples to talk about that kind of programming. Last year, we did a play called After 100 Years, which dealt with the genocide and Holocaust in Cambodia. We partnered with the University of Minnesota Center for Holocaust and Genocide Studies, and we put together three workshop days. The first workshop day was comprised of panel members who were survivors of the Cambodian situation, people who had to reconstruct the education system that had been destroyed as a result of what had happened, as well as members of the American Refugee Committee and also judges who are part of tribunal trials. The participants in the workshop also saw the play, and we had a post-play discussion on it. The teachers attending the first workshop were all teachers from the state of Minnesota who have to teach Holocaust studies in the schools, but they don't necessarily get training for that. This day provided them with the experience of talking to real experts in the field, and they got certificates of extra study for participating in this day. But we also wanted to extend it to the general community. So we replicated the day and invited people from our community to it, as well as doing a special session on war tribunals. I know we all hear about war tribunals, but very few of us learned about them. And by having judges there and having the play to use as an example to talk about, it was an extraordinary day. In addition, we did a day in regard to in Darfur. When we did a play about Darfur, we also gathered members of various refugee committees, various the media, talked about ethics in media, because that was there were a lot of issues related in the play about that. And there is complete documentation of these two programs in the materials that Louise has just distributed to you, and I hope you find them as of interest. The reason I'm talking about those two in particular is because I think theater gives us the opportunity to connect to the world globally, to connect to other people and other times, but to learn through those situations. What are the issues facing us in the world globally? And I think we have a unique opportunity to do this, and we do this for our entire audience. Well, how do we do it? Because I truly think that at the Guthrie, and I know all the people in this room feel this way, we want to promote all the arts for all the citizens, because the arts does enhance our lives and give us that creativity, nurture the imagination, and underline the idea that ideas are important. We honor the idea of creativity and imagination. So the programs that we have at the Guthrie to serve these kinds of philosophies are pre- and post-play discussions. We do over 100 of them for the general community in the course of a year. We do How Do You Do That workshops for people who might want to come in and learn more about technical theater, meet with actors, talk with directors, with lighting designers. Those are open to the entire community. We do elder hostels so that we not only serve people who live in our state, but also people who are studying and coming through as we're a visitor destination, and I think that's an important aspect. I also had the pleasure of starting the Global Voice program at the Guthrie, in which we bring in major voices in the world to talk about the relationship between art and life. Our speakers to date have included Nadine Gordimer for South Africa, Seamus Heaney from Ireland, Gary Trudeau, who we all know, Arthur Miller, Stephen Sondheim,
Neil Simon.
That was great. In the next few months, we're going to have Frank Rich, who's with the New York Times, and Tony Kushner, who we're going to celebrate on all three of our stages at the Guthrie. We also have an in-conversation system series for people who maybe not at the level of artistry that I've talked about, but are of great interest to the community. I'd like to end by talking about another program that I feel also represents the kind of philosophy that we at the Guthrie believe in. And that is, we began a program a few years ago called the Shakespeare Classic. This program is not only to encourage teachers, which we do through all the programs that Louise talked about, but to encourage grandparents, aunts, friends to bring young children to the theater. And so on that one specified Sunday, all the tickets are at an extremely reduced rate. We prepare a special program on the play for children of 7 to 15 years of age. They see the same play that the adults see all the time. And then after the play, they have the opportunity to meet and talk with all the actors who come out in costume. And it's just an electric afternoon. And it was just on Sunday, and so it's very fresh in my mind. And there was over 1,000 people there. And it was just an extraordinary opportunity to see what the power of arts can do. So many people came up to me from Duluth, from Rochester, from Mankato, who had driven in with their children and expressed their great joy in being able to bring their children to see first-class theater, to see the great work of William Shakespeare. And it was an extraordinary afternoon. With this increased legacy funds going to the Minnesota State Arts Board, we are going to be able to deepen and enhance these programs that I believe are so meaningful to all the people of our state. Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you this morning.
Question, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a point of clarification. When you were visiting about some of the adult programs, the lavender sheets, are they past or coming? Because they don't say a year.
I'm sorry. No, that was already held.
Those have been held. Okay.
That's been held, and we hope to do more of them.
Okay.
It was an example of how we try to surround the play.
Good. Thank you.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Smith, first of all, I want to express my deep appreciation for the work that all of you did in organizing the constitutional, the arts portion of the Constitution. I think that's extraordinary work that we are all going to benefit from. You made a very significant point of not supplanting, that these funds should be supplementing. Can you clarify a little on how you anticipate the supplementing to look? Do you have some sense of what that will be?
Ms. Smith.
I think there seems to be a growing consensus amongst all of us that are talking about what are the potentials for an arts education program. There are very consistent themes, regardless of who you're talking to, about it. One of those themes is the collaboration and community connection necessity to maximize the resources that might be available for any new arts education initiative, and also a recognition that although the State Arts Board, the Purpich Center, everybody's doing a lot of really great things, that there are new innovations in arts education collaborations out there in the country that we can really learn from and build something new. And the State Arts Board and Regional Arts Councils have been going through a very extensive strategic planning process that is not yet complete. So we don't have a program written. And one of the issues is that without knowing specifically how many dollars might be available, the scope and ambition of any new program depends very much on what the legislature decides in terms of the parameters available. So some of it has to wait until those parameters are known.
Ms. Smith, if you'd stay at the table, and then thank you, Ms. Chalfont and Ms. Livingston, for your testimony. We'll ask Dave Marty and Michael Robbins to come to the table.
Yeah, I'll move to side.
And maybe Nick Smith as well. Okay. Just thought we'd leave the executive there in case we need to ask her particular questions. Let's start to my left, your right up there, and good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Members of the committee, thank you for the invitation. My name is David Marty. I'm the president of the Rife Arts Council in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. On a personal note, I want to say that it's a tremendous honor for me to speak after one of the true legends in our education community, our arts community. Sheila Livingston is truly a legend at the Guthrie Theater and in the state of Minnesota. We are very proud of her. I wanted
Senator Saxog, do you want to weigh in at this point?
Well, no, I was just going to ask Mr. Marty, it was very important that you said Grand Rapids, Minnesota, and what's the reason for that?
Mr. Marty.
Mr. Chairman, I think the senator is referring to the fact that we lost a band on Saturday night that went to the wrong Grand Rapids. We had a performance scheduled for our stage, and I got a call on Saturday morning indicating that the band had gone to
Michigan.
To Michigan.
No.
Mr. Marty, we don't deal with a lot of Michigan's problems here.
And fortunate we are. But we do have a tremendous opportunity here. And this is truly an exciting opportunity that we have. And as committee members, as senators, you have a fortunate opportunity to really make a difference in our community. I want to speak for just a moment about what goes on in my Grand Rapids in Minnesota, not because it's so unique or so laudable, but because it's an example of what goes on in communities across the state in terms of arts education. First of all, everyone in this room knows that the arts are essential to a quality education. You cannot have basic education without including the arts. It simply can't be done. How we address that in Grand Rapids, Minnesota includes we have a formal partnership with the Kennedy Center. We are partners with partners in arts education with the Kennedy Center, which is a partnership between the Rife Center and the local school. It includes a lot of participation, education opportunities, and includes formalizing arts infusion into day-to-day education in the classroom. We are working with two elementary schools in that regard right now. In addition, I know it's a far piece, but I like pictures. Pictures help me to focus my thoughts. We have a dance program at the Rife Center. We have 250 students working with three full-time professional dance instructors working in three dance studios in Grand Rapids at the Rife Center. This picture are some of the 250 students. They're mostly young women, a few young men, a few adults. These students are actually working with the artistic director of Gus Giordano Dance in a recent workshop that happened. We also have, following many performances, we have what we call Beyond the Stage. We have an opportunity for members of our audience to experience, to talk with artistic directors, with professionals. In this case, Mike Ritchie from the Hibbing Community College is talking about the Pirates of Penzance with interested audience members. This is our attempt. Last fall, we had a touring production of Give a Pig a Party, And we were trying to set a world's record for having more students wearing pig noses than had ever been established before. We didn't bother to actually check what the record was at the time, so we don't know if we set a record or not. But it was fun to have hundreds of little people with pig noses to celebrate, to give a pig a party. This is one of the Children's Performing Arts series. We have an ongoing set of performances of children's theater that comes to our school. In this case, the students are meeting professional actors in the lobby following the performance. We also have an opportunity at the Rife Center. This is a string quartet that is working with students the morning after a performance. They're doing a hands-on workshop in this case, orchestra students, talking about what it's like to play in a chamber orchestra or to play as part of a quartet as opposed to being a soloist or being part of a full orchestra. And our students also participate. Most performers that we have, if they get to the right Grand Rapids, have an opportunity to work with students and adults before or after performances. It's a great opportunity. All of this level of activity, we believe we entrust the review process from the Minnesota State Arts Board and the Regional Arts Council. We trust the system, we believe in it, and it's a very important system, and we encourage the committee members in the Senate to allocate at least half of the funds available in that direction.
Thank you, Mr. Marty. Has the concert been rescheduled? Or is that a lost one?
Unfortunately, that's a loss. And we actually had a state arts board visit on that evening. So, yeah, it wasn't really our best day. But we had a great performer. Nachito Herrera came from Minneapolis and was able to do a performance in any event.
Senator Olson.
Did the band not recognize the difference between MI and MN?
We don't know.
Mr. Chairman, there's some poor little $5 an hour clerk that's taken the hit on that one.
Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marty, we all know that rural Minnesota is suffering economic downturn and many times due to this is a great engine down here and many times they don't experience the same things we do, and we're losing our young people to the metropolitan area. Do you have any at least anecdotal stories that you can tell us about the fact that people who were trying to get to come north, you know, they like a great school system, maybe they like a great hockey program, but they also think that some of the things that you offer are very important?
Mr. Marty?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saxog, thank you for asking that question. Yes, absolutely. We know for a fact the hospital was recently trying to bring in new doctors. Every one of those doctors had a personal tour of the Rife Center. It was an important part, and we know for a fact that decisions were made based on the fact that we do have a cultural center in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. People are not stepping off the end of the world. We have access to the outdoors, but we also have access to the amenities. And we also, because of that, we're able to partner with the Guthrie Theater, and we're able to partner with the Purpich Center. We're able to use the resources that are available in this rich state.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Marty. Mr. Robbins, welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and the committee, a couple things. First, I wanted to say that also I'm from the Illusion Theater, which was founded in 1974.
Mr. Robbins, could you give your name for the record?
Yes, Michael Robbins, and I'm the artistic executive director at the Illusion Theater, which was founded in 1974. And part of it was as I was looking around where to start a company, I had several other states at that time were interested because of the education component that was always part of our mission. And Minnesota was really the right place to do that because of this rich history of partnership And I really think that the way the State Arts Board and the Regional Arts Councils have been a part of Illusion's history for all of these years really speaks to, from experience, the fact that we really think that is the right place to funnel any additional money that could then be re-granted and spread around to everybody across the state. One of the questions that was talked about earlier was, what is a definition of arts education? What's an approach? And I just wanted to share with you that I was recently on a national kind of policy discussion with the education director at the National Endowment for the Arts and a few other people. And I just wanted to share with you what we kind of came up with as sort of a model way to really have a significant arts education approach. And we came up with these sort of three words, three concepts. And what really is important is to be able to say, first, I am, I create, and we create. So that a program really needs to first begin to encourage each individual to understand who they are. And that's a lot of what some arts programs just stop there. But that's sort of, for us, only the beginning. The second is I create. And that is a way to really look at how you have to learn disciplines, you understand what is the way that you as an individual, no matter what your age, are that you go through that internal process and create. And then a lot of programs just stop there. And that's sort of the self-expression part. But to really have a significant arts education impact, you also then take it to the community level and we create, because art, whether it's a solo endeavor like painting in your studio, you still have to create and share that work and work in a kind of community. So really a significant program is the I am, I create, we create. And I think that that's a way to also have kind of depth. And that's one of the areas that Illusion has always sort of tried to put our work into, is significant time and effort with programs, and to go in between the sort of broad, incredible introductory programs we have in the state to something that really works in depth. We've been doing this sort of work for over 30 years, and our first partnership I just wanted to share with you was with Bemidji, Hibbing, and Grand Rapids, and the Minnesota State Arts Board, and the Minnesota Department of Health and Human Services. That's what started our peer education concept. And we have been in some of those communities over those years in Minnesota for 20-year partnerships. And we've reached 69,000 people in arts education partnerships over the last 3 years. We've been in 60% of all Minnesota communities, from Bemidji and Hibbing and Grand Rapids on the first, now to currently we're in 5 Twin Cities high schools, 1 alternative school, 2 junior highs, an elementary school in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and then we're in Irondale, Richfield, and St. Paul Park, and we have a program in Stillwater at the Courage Center. So even though we're a mid-sized organization and our, you know, resources are somewhat limited, we try to really have an reach with this program. Currently, we're also in Austin, Minnesota, Blue Earth, Fairmont, Redwood Schools, Rochester, St. James, and Staples that have ongoing programs. And we spend out the communities outside of the Twin Cities, we spend 28 hours over a period of time with those constituents and students, and then we spend 10 weeks in each of the Twin Cities school programs. And we also have an assessment program that we do. And part of current thinking in evaluation is, for areas that you can't quantify, is to use from the way they work in health sciences and do what's called process evaluation. And I'd be happy to share with you some further research and information about that if you'd like. What's been great over the years really has been kind of the way Minnesota has understood the concept of partnership, how there's a role for the professional arts organizations, the schools, and the community learning. And I really encourage that whatever goes forward with this new legacy funding really understands how to deepen that, because that's something that we really, I don't think, want to lose, and it would be a way to really increase that reach. I also wanted to have you meet and have one of the students that we've worked with, because, you know, arts education, it's true, it's from, you know, when from the day you're born till the day you die, and we have a lot of examples of that. But also, I know a lot of focus is how does arts start and how does it affect youth, and I'd like to introduce Nick Smith, who's going to talk to you a little bit about his experience.
Thank you, Mr. Robbins. Welcome, Mr. Smith. If you would just identify yourself for the record and then present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Nicholas Smith, and as Michael Robinson introduced me, I'm on behalf of Illusion Theater as a student and employee. I went to Southwest High School all my years, and I'm currently at the Institute of Production and Recording for Audio Engineering and Music Production. My senior year of Southwest, I was introduced to Michael Robinson and Bonnie Morris, and they came in and helped produce one of our student performances we had for one of our finals we presented to the students and teachers. And Bonnie and Michael then was able to help us and help the students in the theater aspect in projecting the students and helping us, helping the students put on the performance and best express our emotions and our thoughts to the audience. Art means a lot to me, and art to me is a way to express how somebody feels and express emotions when words are not necessarily an easy way to describe it. In a sense that art is a language, and through art then in that language, then you can communicate with others and through art and help understand each other and communicate in different ways that words cannot always be described. In that sense then, in art, that music in one aspect is a way to learn a language through music, is through music fundamentals and the theory music, and that understanding music notes and the language, then you are able to understand the music aspect and able to communicate with other musicians better, as well in other aspects of art and dance and meditation, understanding your body, theater, projecting yourself, photography, contrast, exposure, visual art, color balance, and all the language that goes along with it. It helps you better understand the artistic point with other artists. And that is from that education that has really helped me and my career that I'm trying to pursue in the music aspect and through theater, as well as that. And as Michael presented in the three aspects that I am, I create, and we create, in the sense of art education, you learn who you are, you learn how to create, and you learn then how to share that with others and create that with others and use that language and express it with other people. And that's what I hope to achieve in my career and through the arts education that I've learned and that I'm currently learning through my music education, that it is a language and how to learn that language and communicate with other people.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. And good luck.
Thank you.
And I also just wanted
questions.
I just wanted to kind of close to say that one of the things that we have done is we've tried to also see where we could work with students, and then as they pursue their career and stay in the state, if there's a way that we can bring them in. So we were able to hire Nick because we had a very complicated show we just did, a new play that needed a technician to deal with a lot of the technology we used. And so it was great to have been able to give some employment during the run of that show. And so there are theaters and organizations around the state, whether they're very large and a flagship like the Guthrie and like ours, that are really working with integrating and keeping the folks here in the state.
Senator Olson.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Robbins, and he was young enough to be able to know all that stuff, right?
Mr. Robbins?
Yes, he was.
Mr. Smith, any relation to the executive director of the Minnesota Citizens for the Arts?
No,
you maybe didn't know her last name was Smith.
I did as of a half an hour ago.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Minnesota Music Educators Association, Mary Sheffley, I believe it is. And we're into our final hours. I just want people to be aware of the time. Thank you. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Chair Scogin and members of the committee. I am Mary Schaefel. I am here today representing the Arts Education Consortium of Minnesota and the Minnesota Music Educators Association, where I am the executive director. Our consortium brings together those interested in arts education policy, including organizations for music, dance, theater, and visual art teachers, teaching artists, and more. The arts and arts education are connected in many ways, but they have a different primary focus. In arts education, as in all education, student learning is the focus. A specific learning goal or objective is identified, and then some activity occurs to move towards that goal. The final step is some sort of assessment, as been mentioned before. Discussion, question from the teacher, a written or creative assignment, and many other forms of assessment. It is this purposeful cycle of identifying a learning goal, designing an activity to reach that goal, and determining whether learning has occurred that defines education and arts education. There is a strong, vibrant arts community in Minnesota, and many artists and organizations do presentations and residencies for school groups. We've heard about a number of them today, and there are probably dozens, hundreds more. Unfortunately, they're often skewed towards the single presentation or a one-time activity due to budget constraints. These presentations can be engaging, but don't necessarily ensure learning. A recent example of an in-depth education experience is from the Austin Public Schools. There are a higher percentage of Hispanic students and English language learners in Austin, and teachers wanted to incorporate those cultures. Music teachers contacted Tres Mundos, a Central and South American trio who also work as teaching artists and who are one of the on the teaching artist roster for Compass. Daniel Gabriel will be testifying in just a moment. The music teacher, classroom teacher, PE teacher, and the district's integration coordinator identified learning goals in language, literacy, geography, music of other cultures, folk and dance movement, and integration of ELL students and families into their school. The teachers met with members of Tres Mundos to prepare activities and to ensure they had the knowledge and skills needed to prepare the students. They worked with the students prior to Tres Mundos Week. Tres Mundos Week did come eventually, and the students were ready to sing, dance, tell stories, listen to the trio, and learn. Student learning was assessed, and students continued to talk about their time with Tres Mundos and what they learned both before and after. That song is from Mexico, and that's where I'm from. The teachers also talk about the confidence the English language learners gained by showing others how to pronounce words and what they meant, rather than being in the reverse situation where they were the learners. An important commonality between the arts and arts education is the role of collaboration and community that's come up many times in the testimony today. In addition to the classroom, arts education occurs in many different places. In the just-released issue of Time magazine, it's actually dated next Monday the 23rd, an article about keeping homeless students in schools illustrates this point beautifully. Tijane is in second grade and lives in a shelter in Minneapolis. She takes the bus 1 hour each way from the shelter where she lives to Ramsey School in the Minneapolis public school system. While there are, unfortunately, many young people like Tijane, what is unique is what she carries on that bus every day with her backpack, a violin. Her mother says that keeping Tijane at Ramsey is her top priority and is grateful that the school has loaned the violin to her daughter. She talks about her daughter bringing out the violin and playing it for volunteers at churches and at the shelter. The social worker at the school says students like Tijane are more resilient if they are able to develop musical skills. An important thing here, Tijane is still in school and progressing towards learning goals in all of her subjects. What the article doesn't mention is just as important. It's the network of organizations beyond Ramsey School that made this possible. Learning Through Music, a very small local nonprofit, partners with Ramsey to bring training and resources to teachers and classrooms. A community orchestra has adopted Ramsey, providing volunteers in the classroom and concerts for the students. Individuals, businesses, and nonprofits have donated instruments, to the Minneapolis Public Schools, so students like Tijani can carry their own their very own violin or saxophone or any other instrument. To ensure access for all students in Minnesota, partnerships like this one with a school or a community center at the hub should be fostered by the arts education component of the Cultural Heritage Fund. The barriers of transportation are significant and real for many students, whether that's rural or urban, and that's why focusing on these neighborhood centers that exist, whether it's a school or an after-school program, is critical. With these concepts and practices in mind, the Arts Education Consortium makes the following specific recommendations regarding the Cultural Heritage Fund and the arts education dollars that will be available. First, legislation should specify what percentage of the Cultural Heritage Fund is dedicated to arts education. Most of the discussion this session has been focused on who would receive the funds. That is something that needs to be decided, but the purpose of the funds or how the money will be spent is also important. Second, legislation should explicitly state a preference for collaborations, especially networks around hubs like schools, after-school programs, and neighborhood or community centers. We need to reach students where they are, in and through schools, after-school programs, and neighborhoods. Third, in order to ensure the greatest impact on arts education, a portion of the funding needs to help all of us create an ongoing, systemic, deep collaboration. Yes, we want to reach as many students as possible, but perhaps we need to focus on having the greatest educational impact through the Arts Education Fund in the Cultural Heritage Fund. Finally, legislation should require that any arts education program funded through the Cultural Heritage Fund address a specific learning goal and how that learning goal will be assessed or measured for individual participants or students. The funds need to focus on academics and learning. Thank you for providing me the opportunity to testify before this committee on the Cultural Heritage Fund and how the arts education dollars can have the greatest impacts on students.
Thank you, Ms. Schaeffel, and I appreciate you getting specific at the end. That's some of what we were looking for. Appreciate that. Senator Olson?
Mr. Chairman, could we have a copy of her testimony?
I'd be happy to provide that to the committee.
That'd be nice.
That would be
you.
Very good. Thank you. And other questions? Thank you, Ms. Schaeffel. Minnesota Arts Board, Sue Jens.
And I do have a handout as well.
Very good. We'll get somebody down there to help you with that.
Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Sue Jens. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota State Arts Board, and it's a pleasure to be here today representing not only the board but our 11 regional arts councils, which I'll talk about in just a bit. And it's a real pleasure to be here to talk with you about some of the things that we currently are doing in arts and education and some of our hopes and dreams as far as education in the future here in Minnesota. Just a little bit of background. If you are not familiar with the Minnesota State Arts Board, we are a state agency. We are guided by Minnesota Statutes Chapter 129D. It outlines our duties and our responsibilities. Basically, our charge is quite simple. It's our job to stimulate and encourage the creation, performance, and appreciation of the arts in the state. Among the many things we're charged with doing, we also are a fiscal agent for regional arts councils. We make grants directly to arts organizations, to individual artists, and to other programs in the state, including schools. And we also do some other kinds of services, technical assistance, and programs. So for a small agency of 9 people and an annual budget of about $10 million, we do try to have as broad an impact as we can. I think it was Sheila Smith who earlier said today that our system is statewide. The Minnesota State Arts Board provides programs and services that impact all 87 counties, as do our 11 regional arts councils. They're divided on county lines. You have a map in your handout so you can see where those 11 regions are. We try to do this two-tiered approach, so we have a statewide focus, and we also have local decision-making as well. I'm going to, my remarks will follow the four questions that I received in advance of this this committee hearing. The first question was, what is arts education? And you'll pardon me, I'm a bit of a history buff, so I'm going to go back to the 1800s and one of my favorite definitions, actually of art, which is that art is a human activity consisting in this, that one person consciously, by means of external signs, hands on to others the feelings that he or she has experienced. The activity of art is to evoke in oneself a feeling one has experienced, and having evoked it in oneself, then by means of movement, line, color, sounds, or forms expressed in words, to transmit that feeling to others who may experience the same feeling. And I always quote the author, that was Leo Tolstoy, in an essay called What is Art? By extension, arts education is the work of teaching and training others to be able to do those very same things, to communicate and connect in powerful ways, to evoke and transmit the most basic of human experiences. At its functional level, the Minnesota State Arts Board uses a definition of arts education that says that it is an act of imparting knowledge, teaching new skills, and further developing existing skills in any of the arts disciplines. So connecting and communicating is the first benefit of the arts. There are two additional benefits that we see in arts education. One of them is that overall, students who have the chance to participate in the arts are better students and do better overall in their academic programs. We've heard that from some of the other testimony this morning. They perform better on college entrance tests. They are more likely to hold a class office or participate in a science or math fair. They're more engaged in school. The other benefit that arts education provides, we believe, is that we are preparing the workforce of the future, something that's really important at this time when we're all thinking about jobs and economic activity. Research strongly supports the idea that young people who learn about and participate in the arts acquire skills that will help them with decision-making, problem-solving, creative thinking, and with teamwork. The National Governors Association released a report recently called Arts in the Economy. And it talked about the importance of the arts to state economies, especially in the light of increasing global competitive economy. It says that the most desirable high-wage jobs require employees with creativity and higher-order problem-solving and communication skills. The industries of the future will rely on those basic core elements. So imagination, problem-solving, communication. They're the core skills in the work that I do. They're probably the core skills in the work that you do here at the legislature. They're the core skills in most of the careers and industries that we can think of. And they are the cornerstones and the key outcomes of most arts education. So let me turn to the second of the questions, which is, what is it specifically that we are doing to help deliver arts education? The Minnesota State Arts Board and the Regional Arts Councils do not provide arts education. What we do is act as catalysts, as supporters, as promoters, and as cheerleaders. We fund the Guthrie Theater. We fund the Rife Arts Center. We fund Illusion. We fund Compass. We help support the great programs that are happening throughout the state. And we do it in three ways. There are direct grants, and you'll see in your handout that I've given you a list on, I think it's page one, of some programs that we have that fund individual artists working with schools, residency programs. We award about $500,000 each year, in the biennium, to 70 schools and 30 arts organizations who will be providing those activities. The outcome of these residencies is high impact, highly skilled teaching in the arts. I've also given you in the handout some samples of arts education programs that our Regional Arts Council partners fund. Again, it tends to focus on residencies or scholarships for students who want to further their learning in the arts. The second way that the Arts Board supports arts education is having an education and outreach requirement for our largest grantees, and those are the organizations that are here today that you've been hearing about. They have to meet four requirements, and this is one of them. We actually have education as a component of many of our grant programs, that the notion of passing on the knowledge and being sure that we're serving the broadest audience possible. In the handout, you'll see that Sheila Smith had mentioned that these education and outreach activities pardon me, total about 17,000 activities per year. And I thought about bringing you a list, but this is the list. And so I hope you'll forgive me for not providing it to the committee. I certainly will if you want to, but I thought it was an impressive group of information. These are activities in Battle Lake Public School, in Montrose Elementary, in the Deep Haven Elementary, in Blue Heron Elementary, in McGregor Elementary, in Greenway High School. These are programs all over the state of Minnesota serving students and communities. The third thing that we do to promote arts education is provide resources and professional development. We work very closely with the Purpich Center on workshops, on training, on helping teaching artists improve their skills and to serve schools in better ways. So we do have a partnership with the Purpich Center that's been very valuable to us. The context for this work has been discussed by most of our other speakers today. I won't say much more about that other than to say that we are concerned that as schools are tightening belts, the arts too often are seen as something that can be easily jettisoned, and that concerns us. It was Dana Gioia, who at the time was the chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts, worried that the diminished state of arts education in schools isn't merely a cultural matter, but it's a social and an economic one. We're facing an entire generation of young Americans who have not had the arts play a significant role in their intellectual and personal development. These young men and women will enter a global economy. Many of them will not have had the opportunities to develop their skills of innovation and creativity. They will not have had the chance to fully realize their human potential. And that's a concern for us. So while we can be proud of the work that we're doing, we know that there's much more that can be done. And that would lead me to the fourth question of the committee, which was, how might the legacy funds help enhance what's already being done? First and foremost, we really hope that schools will continue to be held to high standards, that they will be asked and required to prove that they are meeting the state's graduation standards and academic standards, and not letting that fall by the wayside. But the legacy funds, if they were to come to the Arts Board, could help us do some of the things that you've heard described today. To devise a better integrated, more collaborative program statewide that reaches more students, more school districts, more young people, even outside of school, communities, parks, community centers, parks, other places. And so broadening that. I think it was Mike Hyatt who talked about the one-time wonder. We're very concerned about that there may be a school that has a field trip once a year, and that may be just one class, or it may be that one grade gets a chance to work with a resident artist. What about the rest of the students? What's happening for them? And so broadening that to reach more students is important. The other thing that I think the Arts Board recognizes is that much of what's happening in arts education currently is focused on K-12. And what about the pre-K? What about adults? What about the older adults, a huge and growing part of our population who really will have needs and will have the time and the interest to explore their potential in the arts? So we can imagine an expanded program in a variety of ways. Our vision would be to work with the partners that are here today and others who aren't here today to develop something that we can be proud of here in Minnesota. This is a state that has been long known for creating models, for doing things the right way and trying new things. So we'd really welcome that opportunity to do things in a new way and to reach and serve Minnesotans well into the future. We think the Arts Board is well positioned to do that. We are a state agency. We are subject to the open meeting law. All of our processes are transparent. We are citizen driven. Our boards are citizen members. Most of our decisions about grants are made by citizens. And we also are flexible. With a new opportunity, the chance to work with other partners, we think we could come up with a really strong program that the voters who said we want more investment in the arts, not less, would be proud of. So I'll leave it at that. And be happy to answer any questions that you might have about what we're currently doing. I'm sorry I can't give you more specifics yet about the parameters of a program. As Sheila Smith alluded to, we're working as quickly as we can on planning and trying to get something put together that we can all be proud of. But we can talk about our goals and our general directions.
Thank you, Ms. Jens. Questions for Ms. Jens? I appreciate also you kind of helping us focus on our mission as a working group. I appreciate that. There's a lot of people that want to get into assessment, Senator Rummel. You've got to be encouraged by that.
Mm-hmm. What I'm most encouraged, Mr. Chair, is that I believe that the arts can give us insights into the kind of assessment for those skills that Ms. Jens just mentioned, the core skills of imagination, problem solving, and communication. Those are going to be the key skills, not only of today, but of the future, and they're very difficult to measure. So I look forward to the arts participation in that conversation. I did want to share one of my favorite definitions for art. It's a lot shorter than yours. And art is that which, art makes visible that which is invisible.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
That's Paul Klee, I think.
All right. Very good.
Senator Saxhog, did you have a definition of art?
No, I don't.
Okay. Another comment?
I'm not a definition type guy. Back to rural Minnesota and how important the arts are to rural Minnesota, and what I was going to say is I know that the Minnesota Arts Board contributes, as you've talked about, to a lot of different programs. And when I get to page 6 of the Illusion Theater, it's on speech and debate. You see that it's directed by Peter Rothstein, who came out of the Rife Arts Council, so you don't necessarily have to go to the Purpich School to get into the arts and be successful, it's important, I think, to realize.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Olson,
that's why long ago I offered that amendment creating those magnet centers, because I think that there's, you know, if you can bring resources into some centers that allow more participation than for those who don't wish to or can't pursue a residential kind of operation, that had some value. And so I'm glad it's hanging on by a thread, but I'd certainly like to see that get back to some a greater regionalization, because I think it provides that kind of thing does. It wouldn't be probably too hard to identify, but it's easy for all of the kinds of entities that are present here and those that aren't to take advantage of them as a means of reaching with the tremendous opportunities and knowledge and experience that they have.
Senator Olson, there are days when good work is done here.
Yep.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if I fell asleep momentarily. I did want to make a comment on Mr. Robbins's presentation from the Illusion Theater. I was very impressed with art, the work that you do, helping students understand I am, I create, we create. And I think I'd add one thing there. When we create, we see who we are and how critical that is to us as a society to see where we are going and what we value and maybe what we have to change.
Thank you, Ms. Jens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
And we're going to bring Dan Gabriel up, but is Mary Schaffel still in the room? Would you come back just for a moment? I've had something kind of just burning in my head since you left the table, and I just wanted to have you comment, if you would, one of the four criteria you laid out for us. Tell me what your thought is when you say education impact.
When I talk about educational impact, one of the what I was thinking about specifically is that, unfortunately, too many Mike Hyatt talked about the one-time wonder. Some other people have talked about that, too. There was some testimony on Monday evening in the House. Some of us were there. And David O'Fallon from the MacPhail Center for Music spoke and talked about some research showing that they had a partnership with some schools, and it was in the second and third years of sustained work with that school and those students that they started seeing changes, not just for the specific thing that they were trying to learn, but overall academic improvement, engagement in school, staying in school, behavior kinds of things. And that is something that I also learned about in another program that's going on with the Osseo School District and one of their high-poverty schools, the Birch Grove Elementary, where they were basically going on the AYP list, and they bet on arts integration as their way of getting off of AYP. They didn't hire more reading specialists or more this or more that. They bet on arts integration. And they have somebody in the school, and the school district is supporting this with their funds, but it's also important that they're receiving, they've reached out, and they've got grant dollars from other organizations working with arts organizations to support that as well. They were really pleased in either the second or third year, every single subgroup in that school met age level criteria on the high stakes test. They did miss math in one subgroup, and they're working hard on that too. The thing that's important is that, to me, is that those kids, yes, they passed the high quality, the high stakes testing, and that's a measure. It's not the only measure. But what's important is that the kids and these parents are very, very involved in that school. They've got arts organizations working with the kids. They're trying new things. So when I talk about educational impact, I think that's actually one of the things that we need to think about, how we measure it. And I would just say that for the arts programs that are funded or the community organizations, maybe it's a Boys and Girls Club, I don't know, that are funded through the amendment, we really need to look at that kind of a deep educational impact and ongoing work rather than just trying to get to as many kids as possible.
Thank you for clarifying that, and we'll try not to let you down.
Thank you.
Senator Rummel, music to your ears.
Absolutely, once again. And also, it is one of the schools in my home district in White Bear Lake that is partnering with the McPhail. And somebody mentioned art beginning way before first grade. They have classes for two-month-old, three-month-old, year-old babies and their parents in music. And it's, if you really want to lift, go there someday when they're having those classes. It is incredible. And it is one of our schools that struggles, and it has made a significant difference to those children to have music in their lives every single day.
Thank you, Ms. Schaefer.
Our only one.
Daniel Gabriel. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Chair Scogan and members of the committee. Some interesting side notes coming up here. You know, you get two artists together, you get three definitions of art. I'd kind of like to keep exploring that.
Your name for the record, please.
I'm Daniel Gabriel from Compass. I'm a professional writer. I'm a former writer in the schools, and for over 20 years I've been working with Compass. I'm currently the director of arts education programs and the director of arts in healthcare. Compass itself is a statewide community arts organization based in St. Paul. Our mission is to strengthen people and communities throughout Minnesota by engaging them in creating art. We do that not just in schools, but also in libraries, community centers, hospitals, clinics, businesses, all elements of the community. Over the years, Compass has incubated a wide variety of arts programs. Current programs include such things as the Arts and Healthcare Program, where we're building community and wellness in various healthcare sites, such as neighborhood clinics, long-term therapy settings, end-of-life care, teenage medical services, and so on. Our Arts Work Program is a summer youth employment opportunity for youth ages 14 to 21 to get on-the-job training in visual, literary, and performing arts while learning vital work skills. We also have a variety of re-granting programs, working with corporate and foundation sources. And in those, we provide services. We support organizations that serve the arts in a variety of ways, including K-12 schools. And finally, I would just mention our United Arts program, which supports 30 arts organizations across the state of Minnesota through workplace giving. Each year, over 300,000 Minnesotans take part in programs funded by United Arts. But to focus back on our arts education programs, we have a roster of 100-plus artists and arts groups who work at 150 different schools and community sites around the state each year. We do it in primarily three different ways: large group performance, small group workshop, and residency programs, which involve multiple sessions with each group, as well as teacher in-service and community events as part of that package. The programs we offer are Writers and Artists in the Schools, Global Arts and Culture, and our newest edition, Young Audiences of Minnesota. We work across the state. We've been doing this for over 40 years, and we've been providing services in virtually every single legislative district in Minnesota. Some of the trends that we've noticed over that time are that in the past, school districts usually provided these services through direct budget support. More and more, that's not happening. The way these things are continuing is through the support of PTAs and special funds. Another trend we've seen is that increasingly there's a large extent of the work of the teaching artists being directly connected to ongoing curricular needs. And thirdly, as Minnesota's classrooms are increasingly populated by students from all across the world, we see teachers telling us over and over how valuable it is to have teaching artists in the room serving as alternate role models and as visual representations of various cultures standing there in the front of the room and directing activities. In the modern world, arts education opportunities are not add-ons. These are essentials. But it's important that in Minnesota we provide them to everybody, not just to those pockets of excellence that are able to be supported because of ample resources in a particular community. The arts feed and support the development of multiple intelligences. The arts offer a means of engagement and access for students with different learning styles. The arts are the very core of what Daniel Pink calls the six senses needed for economic and career success in the 21st century: design, story, symphony, empathy, play, and meaning. I would strongly second the recommendations of Mary Scheffel and others who have spoken here as to the direction and use of the legacy amendment funds. But I want to finish by stressing that the arts are at the core of effective education. They are identified as such in the Minnesota State Standards, but this is something that goes beyond standards. When we send spoken word artist Frank Santuali out to Brooklyn Junior High in Brooklyn Park, we know that he is providing vital speaking and writing skills for their growing population of African immigrants. When we send visual artist or photographer Usri Allen to Roseau, or writer Stephen Peters to Carlstead, we know that we're opening windows on the world that would not otherwise be available in those communities. Last week, Wadena Deer Creek had a writing residency. Later this month, it'll be physical theater. In April, they're going to do a third residency involving landfill robots, where you transform recyclables into living works of art. They know how valuable this is. What we need to do is make sure that we provide every single child, every single district in Minnesota, the opportunity for these same sorts of activities. Thank you for your time, and I'm open for questions.
Thank you. Senator Olson, anything, or we'll move on?
No, Mr. Chairman, he just made me think about WALL-E.
All right. Well, you should see some of the creations are far, far beyond what WALL-E can do.
Thank you, Mr. Gabriel. Appreciate that.
All right. Thank you.
And we're going to finish this morning with Bill Straczynski, and I believe...
Yeah, Mr. Chairman?
Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Olson.
Some of the recent comments about the... it seems that there's another audience that needs to be reached when schools are making cuts, and that's some of the decision makers at the local level that may not recognize the message that you have. And so, you know, we may have good people in the arts and so on, but if you don't have believers at that level, that's where those decisions get made.
And I think, Senator Olson, sometimes we push so hard to the bottom line that we don't allow them to kind of think outside the box, and as a result, things fall by the wayside. Let's take another look at art and education. Bill Straczynski, and I believe Diane Steinbach is with Bill today. Good morning and welcome. Now, just because it's 22 minutes to 11 doesn't mean you need to take all 22 minutes, Bill. I'm just...
Mr. Chairman, I have 45 minutes worth of prepared remarks. I can't help it.
You'll be talking alone then.
Chairman, that's happened in room 112 before, actually.
Welcome, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Bill Straczynski, and I represent the Friends of Minnesota Public Television. And I must say, I've changed my remarks many times while just sitting here today. I'm really excited about this presentation and the opportunity to show this committee, because we're pretty used to testifying in other committees about what we do. And I trust that you'd be kind of impressed about not only what we have done, what we can do and what we want to do in the future. I'm really excited about it. In fact, I'm so excited. I wish I had my accordion here. I'd be playing the beer barrel polka for you folks right now if I had my accordion here. That's how excited I am.
We're so glad you don't.
Mr. Chairman, I hear that all the time about accordion players. But in any event, thank you. I have a couple of handouts of staff trying to help with this. I have to give you a little bit of background, at least, about public television. I think it's helpful. The mission of public television is the same as this committee. We want to serve the people of Minnesota, and we do serve the people of Minnesota. We want to meet the constitutional amendment's investment goals. Our mission is to ensure that we have an educated community that has greater access to the arts and the opportunity to develop a better understanding of Minnesota's heritage. That's what we do. We've been doing this since 1956 when this legislature gave us the first appropriation for educational television, Twin Cities Public Television. The Minnesota Public Television Association is made up of six independently operated public television stations located throughout the state of Minnesota. You should know that we reach over the air, without cable or anything else, and now you'll need a digital converter box, we reach over 4.6 million people in this state. We reach 98% of the public in this state through our nonprofit, independently owned and operated stations, which are owned by the community. And each station is now providing, because we're interconnected, thanks to the legislative funding for digital conversion, providing multiple channel offerings.
Mr. Chair, could you just align the mic more with you? Because you're feeding
you.
In and out.
I think I'll do it this way.
It comes and goes when you turn your head, Mr. Straczynski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
In addition to providing multiple channel offerings now through the digital environment, the Minnesota Channel, which features a variety of programming now, and that's the form, it's about Minnesota and its close neighbors. And many of the programs are produced in partnership with the Minnesota's finest nonprofit and public service organizations, including in the Minnesota Channel program, for example, is live gavel-to-gavel coverage with the House and Senate. Viewers now across the state of Minnesota can watch what happens at the legislature, certainly during legislative session. We serve everyone. Public television in Minnesota serves all. Its viewership is not dominated by any age group, income level, or education level, or other demographic measure. Our audience reflects the full diversity of the communities we serve. Public television serves more people more often, frankly, than any other cultural and educational organization in Minnesota. In fact, the people who tune into public television in Minnesota each month, and there's over 2 million of them, 2.5 million, I think, was the latest ratings, each month would fill the Metrodome 42 times, or the Orchestra Hall 816 times, or would fill the Ordway 1,052 times. That's important because, frankly, we support the funding initiative put forward by the Citizens for the Minnesota Arts. It's extremely important what they do. We need them, and we can carry that much further, and you'll see more about that in just a moment. You should know also that we were very active in passing this amendment. We have been part of this process and put our political support behind the language of the bill for many, many years, going back to when it was first introduced. It's important. And we also, we have been very active in supporting the amendment in educating Minnesota voters about the ballot issue. All of the Minnesota public television stations, in fact, in the state, devoted significant airtime encouraging over 3 million viewers to learn about this issue and make an informed vote. That's how many people watched our public service announcements that were put together specifically on the amendment. So we educated a lot of folks, and we're pleased that the voters made an informed choice. So now that the ballot is passed, and we knew that coming on board at the same time was our new digital capacity, we have four channels now where we used to have one before. The timing was perfect, and we knew this for several years, and that's why we got so actively engaged this entire process, because now there's financial resources available to help us carry our mission even further forward, which is your mission, and we'll tell you a little bit more how to do that as well. Mr. Chairman, so we're very pleased with that. And we can feel we can partner in partnership with others in the arts and cultural heritage areas in our state in four very important ways. First, we amplify the outstanding work of Minnesota's arts and cultural heritage and environmental organizations. If a local artist displays her work, for example, in a gallery or a museum in Duluth, maybe hundreds of people can see it. And that's wonderful, those folks there. If we feature her work on Minnesota public television, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people can have the opportunity to appreciate her work. That's how we see it. Second, we will provide access to all Minnesotans free over the air and on the web as well. The best our state has to offer from these communities is extremely important. The money, the people that we are investing through this legacy amendment is ultimately meant to benefit the people of the state. And through public television, the people of Minnesota can have access to it free of charge, no tickets to buy. Third, we can archive the good work we do for future generations to see. This is extremely important. In addition to reaching millions through our broadcast, public television will use the new media technologies to make programs available for a lifetime for future generations to enjoy and appreciate. Public television is already digitizing and archiving vast quantities of programming, past and present, in the beta format and then through the Minnesota Vault site. It is a searchable database available to the public by hitting their websites. You can pull out all kinds of educational programs, all kinds of programs for educators, use in classrooms, what have you. It's used by the public anytime. Additional funding will now allow public television stations to further enhance this new media technology. And finally, we can help the legislature be accountable and demonstrate the good kinds of work you're doing under the Legacy Amendment. We can help with that effort as well by producing programs that deal with that. Because our audience cuts across so many age groups and economic and educational level, we take special care to ensure that our programming schedules are as varied as the people who watch them. In order to bring more unique programming to the public we serve, we'll actively collaborate with other local organizations and nonprofits to increase audience access to these important local institutions. We've done this in the past. It's not just institutions, it's also individuals, I should point out. Mr. Chairman, very quickly, with the passing of the Clean Water Legacy Amendment, the Minnesota Public Television Association is requesting $12 million for the public stations serving Minnesota. With this funding, public television will focus on two priorities: preparing for the digital future and strengthening the existing foundation of public television, and most importantly, producing more programs that preserve and promote the arts and Minnesota's cultural heritage. This investment will focus on will result in a stimulation of new job creation and employment stability in the artistic field of media production, a specialty field where there are very few employers in the state of Minnesota. New jobs might include directors, editors, production crew personnel, lighting technicians, audio specialists, set designers, graphic designers, and web designers. Also, an increase in the visibility of individual artists and the organizations that support the arts and cultural heritage of Minnesota, one of the goals accomplished through this initiative. And finally, a lifetime of programs and services to be enjoyed for future generations by using these new media technologies. I have a lot more to say, Mr. Chairman, but I'll stop there and at least introduce Diane Staubach, who is the executive producer of Arts and Cultural Education, for TPT, to give you a flavor of what we do in education and what we would do more so of in the future.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Trzcinski, the request that you just talked about, is that one that you've submitted for regular state funding, or is that one that you think should qualify for legacy funds?
Mr. Trzcinski.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, that's a funding request we think is eligible for funding under the Legacy Amendment. It would supplement what we're doing now, not supplant what we're doing now. And it's extremely important. We've worked long and hard to get to this point, and so that's our request to under the legacy funding.
Follow up, Senator Olson, or is that?
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I was saying, it seemed to me that it was more infrastructure oriented than it was, focusing on specifically on the arts, and that I might see that a little differently. I'd have to think about that. But
Mr. Straczynski?
Mr. Chairman, I can break that down a little bit further for you.
No, you don't have to do it now.
Okay. No, but it's real simple. You need infrastructure. You've got to have it in order to produce public television, and our costs are much more enormous in a digital environment, as you can imagine. This is a federal mandate that affected public television. So our request basically is going to be about $2 million in block grants, which we already have statutory language that deals with that. It's been around for a long time, but we haven't used the block grant category for some time. And then a $10 million in addition to that would go into productions by all the stations in Minnesota. Public television is very expensive medium to produce. It's very expensive. Cameras, equipment, everything is very expensive, but we're looking at $10 million. And frankly, we have the ability to tell you what kinds of things we will produce, and we can show you measurable outcomes at the end of the year, for example. Here's the programs. Here's how many people saw it. Here's the educational materials we put together for school district teachers' guides. We have all of that stuff. We're used to doing that. This money gives us an opportunity to carry, I think, your mission, certainly the arts community's mission, forward to a wonderful level. And Diane can speak more to that right now.
Yes. Ms. Steinbach, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I have been with Twin Cities Public Television since the 1980s, and I'll give you just a brief resume so that you know a little bit about my background, only because it relates both to television and to the arts. I was producing arts programming for Twin Cities Public Television in the 1980s. I went to Madison, Wisconsin as an arts administrator working for a municipal agency there where we developed an arts, among many other programs, public art, a grant-making program, a local gallery, and my proudest moment was a program that we developed in the 15 neighborhood centers within the city of Madison that placed artists working in the after-school programs there, a program called ArtWorks. Because of my lifelong professional and personal interest in the arts, I also, was really interested in working both with arts organizations and in taking my television background and using the incredible reach that television has to promote the arts and to be an arts advocate. I would never presume to say that Twin Cities Public Television or the Minnesota Public Television Association is an arts institution. It's not. It is one of many, many content areas that we serve. But our roots are in education. It's the reason that I personally have chosen this as a profession. And it is a way to partner with the arts organizations, especially with a statewide network, and to serve the people of Minnesota and to educate them about the arts and the importance of the arts. And so with the Arts Legacy Funds, I was so proud of the voters and all of these people here who work so hard to get the word out to the voters about how important this is, both our environment, our cultural heritage, and our arts organizations that serve the state. We have had many, many programs and partnerships through the development of our Minnesota Channel, which is a way in which we developed over the last 5 years, I think, in anticipation of this digital allocation that we would be given, and also partnering with arts organizations to get their word out on a statewide basis. So the Minnesota Channel, over the years, we've worked with many arts organizations and history organizations to use the Minnesota Channel, which is now statewide over all the stations of the Minnesota Public Television Association. I just want to give you a couple of examples of how we, when we produce programs in the arts, we don't just produce programs and tell that story in a half hour or an hour format, but these have a very long shelf life. Most of them, especially history programs, are evergreen. The arts are, through public television and now our Minnesota Video Vault, accessible to a wide range of people. And we also partner with the arts not only to present their content, but also to promote them. It promotes cultural tourism. It builds their capacity. It builds our capacity because, as we know, everything in life takes practice. And so the more we work together, the more proficient we become. So it's been good for Twin Cities Public Television and the Minnesota Public Television Association. It's been a wonderful relationship builder between most of the arts organizations that have been able to afford to work with us on fundraising to commit some of their programs and their content to videotape forever, but also with broadcast and incredible reach around the state. A few programs just to point out, and I can bring these up to you so you can see them more closely, but these are DVD jackets. This was a program we produced a couple of years ago called Cass Gilbert Standing the Test of Time. And of course, we all know that architect Cass Gilbert built the Queen Mother of Art here, the state capitol. He designed it. And this was, we partnered with the Cass Gilbert Society on this program to create an educational piece first, a broadcast program secondly, and also to have it be produced for use in the classroom. And the way we do that now with digital technology and DVDs is that we're able to produce stories in smaller increments, say 10. It could be a half-hour program that has multiple shorter segments because, of course, classroom teachers that we've spoken to in designing these programs need to have a shorter period of time. They can't run a half-hour or an hour program in a classroom period of 50 minutes. So we segment it so that there are various chapters, and a teacher could use this and several other programs that I'll talk about over the course of a week when studying architecture. And we also make sure that the content and the lesson guides we develop with it meet Minnesota standards for teaching art. And then lesson guides are downloadable on the website. And if we have more budget, then we're able to design a website that teachers can use as well. So it's really helpful to teachers. This was North Star Minnesota's Black Pioneers, which took some of the lesser known figures in African American history in Minnesota and Minnesota's first attorney, female attorney, Lena Smith, here in Minneapolis, and then George Bunga and Prince Honeycutt, that's just to name a few. This is still on. This was produced in the school districts, helped us fund this because they said they needed it. They really don't have any. They didn't have any. They have African-American children, but they don't have any classroom materials to use to engage children in the subject matter. So this is still, it lives on the TPT website, a full North Star website with buttons that kids can, you know, it was all designed with students in mind. We partnered with the History Center on James J. Hill Empire Builder. On this DVD, we have, again, a half-hour program. We have a 10-minute video that the Hill House uses on all of its tours now. And they commissioned, you know, us to work with them on developing this. And then in the other subsequent chapters, we have scholars and Hill historians talking at length, if, you know, children or adults who may find this at the Hill House are interested in having more background on who James J. Hill was. This is the Schubert Club Composers Tour. We all know that the Schubert Club has this incredible museum of manuscripts and also instruments in the basement of the Landmark Center. They've done two programs with us. They're half hours. They are shown to school tours as they come through building. And also teachers are using them to show the students before they arrive on these tours. So they have a little bit of background before they arrive. Same thing with Cass Gilbert. One of the things that teachers told us, thousands of kids come from all over the state to tour this wonderful building. And they try to teach them as much as they can before they come. But we know television, sometimes to a fault, engages children. This is the Cass Gilbert piece is a 15-minute sort of primer that helps kids understand when they get to the state capitol what they will be seeing. And, of course, now we're in an economic situation where schools are finding it more and more difficult to come to the state capitol. And thank heaven we have this videotape that at least they do have some images of what happens here and what this building represents in our history and who were the artists that were responsible for designing it. So that's just one aspect. We've also worked quite a bit, as much, again, as arts organizations and we can afford. We've tried to develop some fundraising efforts that help arts organizations afford. McKnight gave us some money, for example, to help us re-grant to smaller arts organizations so that, you know, we've worked with the Guthrie, we've worked with Minnesota Orchestra, and we've had a long-standing series with the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra. And it promotes cultural tourism in the sense that these organizations are here in the Twin Cities, but we're taking these programs on a regular basis out on the state network. And so when people come to the Twin Cities, or if they never have an opportunity to come to the Twin Cities, they're able to see it on television. And even with older citizens and younger children or young families who don't have babysitters or don't have the money anymore to hire babysitters or have that evening out, television does provide free of charge the ability to attend a chamber orchestra concert or a Minnesota orchestra concert, or to go on tour with the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, as we did, and to learn from that who the musicians are, up close and personal, but also why it's important for an orchestra to tour, just in terms of the cultural reciprocation that goes on when you have musicians from one country meeting with musicians from another country. We're also producing a choral documentary right now in concert with an independent producer on the history of Minnesota's choral tradition. We all know about St. Olaf and Concordia, but there are very few people in this state who don't sing in a church choir, have some formal training, do it for fun. There are many, many music organizations who meet at night, and so we're doing a documentary on why Minnesota, what are the roots of that choral tradition in this state. And we could do the same thing with so many other arts organizations. So it's really my great pleasure to be able here to sit here and to sort of explain to you what some of the aspects of our television network partnering with arts organizations around the state and what sort of reach and capability, as everyone has said before me, it's really important to reach people, to make the arts more accessible. Arts education is important. You know, the NEA has one of the greatest handles I think they've had in all of their history, and that is, a great nation deserves great art. And I think Minnesota deserves great art. And so we're able to provide that service, and I hope we're able to do it for a very long time. Digital technology is helping us through the Minnesota Video Vault to be even more accessible, and I can only hope with further technology developments in this digital age, we'll be able to do even more at even less cost.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Steinbach.
Mr. Chairman, let me just wrap up by simply saying that this handout I gave you today reflects what's going on around the state and the thinking of some of the stations around the state. It's a flavor for that. And all the stuff we're doing has an education component. I mean, we create educational guides. We work with school districts all the time and teacher groups, and even in daycare centers. We provide ready-to-learn materials from Sesame Street Workshop and whatever. We give these materials free to these folks. Plus, videos and things that we produce are available to them to promote and do whatever they want to. We do a lot of stuff with the school districts, and I just want to say that, there's all kinds of statistics and reports and studies that show you the kids that learn through Sesame Street and some of the other wonderful programs we have are better prepared for the K-12 experience, and they do better. I mean, this is just literally a fact. We've been around a long time. So, again, the timing is perfect. The legacy money, our digital transition, more capacity, and more opportunities now with these resources are coming together at the same time. And this committee should also know that every dollar we get from the state of Minnesota is leveraged for dollars from other folks. We're pretty good masters at raising money. That's what we do. We get money from the federal government for every dollar you contribute here, too. So you really get a tremendously loud bang for the dollars that you invest in public television. You give us some grants to do productions now. You'll be very amazed at what we can produce and what will be available to the students and to the public throughout the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. And as predicted, we were going to eventually lose our members, and I apologize for that, but they had other committees to get to as we got up to 11 o'clock. Mr. Straczynski, I'm just going to have, for the record, have you comment on the digital deadline and what your game plan was had this not passed, because you seem to think that this legacy money has now kind of opened the door to help you finish the project, but there had to have been a game plan if it hadn't passed.
Mr. Chairman, regarding the legacy funding, we would continue to try and do the best we can with the resources we have, and that was what we do. with the funding we've always, the traditional funding we've gotten from the state of Minnesota. But we knew, and I testified about 8 years ago, the first time in front of this legislature, about the digital transition. It was a federal mandate. We've known it for years that it was coming, and the technology was changing. It was a mandate by the federal government. And so we knew that that was coming. And for the last 4 or 5 years, as this legislature appropriated money, had governor's veto money, legislatures have overridden vetoes, in fact, for us, for public television digital conversion. So we've known that's coming for several years, and the dates have always held firm. Federal government just had to do that. And so we knew that that was coming. And then when the legacy amendment started showing up, coinciding with that, we just knew what the capacity and the potential was. So we didn't. There really wasn't any doubt in our mind. That's why we worked so hard to help pass the legacy amendment. We didn't pass it, but we worked in coalition with the arts community, the Vote Yes, and everyone else to make it happen, because we saw this tremendous opportunity to carry forward what we already do and now expand it dramatically to impact more people.
And I'm not going to beat you up on it, but would that be supplanting money or supplementing? Because as the money starts to grow, there's going to be a real conversation about what we're doing with it and whether it's supplanting or supplementing.
Mr. Chairman, that's an excellent question. We have a regular request, a budget request, through, actually, and historically it's gone the State Government Finance Division. We receive grants under the Department of Administration. That's a different grant process. That's matching grants and whatever. That's there. That's already existing. This money does not supplant that existing appropriation or that request. That's going forward. This is new money. We're telling you what else we can do with the dollars.
Appreciate your comments.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Ms. Steinbeck.
Thank you,
Mr. Straczynski. That's going to do it. I just want, in closing comments, I just want the groups, I want to thank them for their time and their information. And I just want you, as we move forward, to maybe narrow your focus in regards to this committee to K-12 education, because really that's our borders. And we heard other education pieces today, which is fine. But as we move forward, if we're able to put any of our hands on any of that money, and we don't even know the answer to that yet, but as we get back to you and you get back to us, be thinking more in that K-12 realm, or E-12 realm, actually, early education and on. I want to thank you for your time. I think what we've heard today is important information. I think it's opening some doors of knowledge to us about what is going on out there and how that money that we put on the table is being spent. And you know, the arts, there is no doubt about it, hones discipline. And students are better students that are involved in the arts. I believe that. And I thank you for the work you're doing and the time that you're putting into it. And I think if there's one thing we saw in this room today was passion. And people who are involved in a discipline of the arts have passion. And I know the full committee looks forward to the day when we can put our hands on some of that money and put it to good work. So we're going to be as transparent as possible as we move through that process. This subcommittee will check in with Senator Stumpf and the E-12 committee now, and we'll start to have some conversations about how we engage you in the process. So I appreciate your time today. Thank you. And this working group is adjourned.